The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Between now and 12 o'clock, proposals, suggestions, recommendations that Ireland should go nuclear power. This is a document sent in by Air Grid to government saying if you really want sustainability and power, maybe nuclear is worth a consideration. We're facing into what looks to be one of the tightest budgets in recent years. Some reports suggesting, as the Times puts it, ministers braced for backlash on tight budget. And we have a presidential campaign that is hotting up. According to the Sunday Independent, which is an Ireland Thinks poll, Connolly leads in Aura's race as support for Gavin drops, and they have Catherine Connolly at 32%, Heather Humphreys at 23%, and Jim Gavin at 15%. This despite the fact of all of the coverage about Catherine Connolly having hired an Éireagh supporter who had just come out of jail on a gun-related charge, and who, according to the front of the Mail on Sunday, was being monitored by anti-terror Gardaí while she was working for now presidential candidate Catherine Connolly. With me is Louise O'Reilly from Sinn Féin, Pat Rabbit, former leader of the Labour Party, and Austin Hughes, economist. Pat, will it make a blind bit of difference to any of Catherine Connolly's electorate that she had hired somebody who was previously a dissident gunwoman?
I think it'll make a difference to some people. But the article I thought was interesting today was Colin Murphy in the Sunday Independent. And it's a very interesting analysis by him. He puts her performance down to her authenticity. You know, that the various questions that have been thrown at her, she hasn't sought to dodge or weave or deny them. She has, argued back, explained her position. She's clearly a politician of conviction. Perhaps she's too idealistic for a lot of people, but the poll is a very strong one, and there's a long way to go yet.
The only exception to what you're saying about her straight talking seems to be the Mail's continued pursuit of her, trying to get her to condemn Sinn Féin for their honouring of former terrorists. And she seems to be doing a fairly good job of dodging that one.
Well, it's a pretty obvious why she would be reluctant to take issue with a party that's supporting her. But I think she has indicated in it she doesn't agree with Sinn Féin. She doesn't agree with any of the parties supporting her on everything. And from that point of view, you can read between the lines, I think, that she doesn't agree with that particular Sinn Féin position. And she has emphasised from the beginning, she is an independent candidate supported by a number of parties. And I don't think there's going to be any backtracking on the positions that she has set out so far.
Now, what she's saying in relation to Ursula Ní Eolann, who is the woman who was under surveillance by Gardaí and had previously been convicted of gun offences, what she's saying about her is that she is an example, Austin, of the prison system working beautifully, that she was rehabilitated by her time in jail and therefore a very good person to hire.
Well, the jury still seems out on kind of the membership post-prison release. And again, there is an element that she has to be like Caesar's wife above all suspicion. And in that regard, while it may not affect the core support, there's the opinion poll suggests there's a lot of don't knows, a lot of not sure whether I'll even vote still there. And I
something
think
like 30%, one in three still haven't decided.
Exactly. You know, don't know is one of the red hot favourites in the presidential race. You know, so in that regard, I think there's still a bit of work to be done. I think the Shane Coleman piece in today's paper talks about not writing off Jim Gavin. Even as an economist, I'd probably be a bit more definitive than Pat on that. I think it's going to be very hard for Jim to pull back the sort of ground. But the Shane Coleman piece does make an interesting one. He compares the presidential race to a slow bicycle race, and he says that it's still being on the bike at the end. You know, we have the debate today, we have the budget, and then we have all the events that are going to occur over the next 3 weeks. The polling day and the decision day are going to be very close together, and it may not be that we don't know definitively what the position is till the end, but I do think kind of the shadows of this, you know, relationship with fellow travellers of, you know, groups, that is going to hang in the air for some swing voters, not for all, probably not for people, you know, who will look at broader issues, but I do think it will still be a negative.
Will it be that significant? I think, I mean, Martin McGuinness was caught with, what, 5,000 rounds of ammunition and 100 kilos of explosives, and he still came third in 2011.
So we're 30 years into a peace process that has, in large part, been successful. I think the at the moment, and I can say this with some confidence because I'm out rapping doors every chance I can for Catherine, with people not just from my own party, but a lot of independents and people from People Before Profit and the Socialist Party all out together. We're knocking on doors. People like Catherine. They like her authenticity. They like the fact that she speaks her mind, but she doesn't, as a man said to me on the door, and I'm not exactly sure if it was a dig at me or what, he said, that lady never raises her voice, but she always gets her point across. And I'm sure it wasn't a dig at me, actually. But she is, you know, she is very authentic, as Pat said. It's her authenticity.
And what about the hiring of Ms. Nguyen-On? Was that an error by Catherine Connolly? Or do you accept her bona fides when she says this person was rehabilitated by the prison system?
Well, you know, she followed all of the procedures within the Oireachtas. And those procedures, I've had to do it myself, those procedures are robust. She took a recommendation from a former Fianna Fáil minister, a person who would be very well regarded within the Irish language community. I mean, I don't think anyone would dispute Eamon O'Queeve's credentials. And she took a recommendation.
Was she right?
From him. Well, I think she was right to seek out the best person for the job. And that's what she did. She was right to follow the procedures and the processes within the Oireachtas. And that's what she did.
But at the fundamental part of, was this person correct to be brought within the Houses of the Oireachtas? Was this person correct to be given a position, given that they had previously served time for gun offences? Is that right? Should
that
have happened?
I don't think that, you know, a person having committed a crime and gone to prison, I don't think that should preclude you ever from having work. And if you could just indulge me a moment, I'd like to quote no less than Simon Harris when he was Minister for Justice and he launched a task force. He said that the task force is all about ensuring that persons in custody can access education and training opportunities and hopefully access employment or indeed further or higher education on release. So, you know, we do have to understand that people, you know, when they have served a sentence, they are entitled to move on after that. They are entitled to get on with their lives. And I agree, I rarely agree with him actually, but I agree with Simon Harris on that.
What about the membership in an organisation that, for the Sinn Féin candidate, because she is that as well as the candidate of the left, it is an organisation which...
No, I'm sorry, she's not the Sinn Féin candidate. This is the point. She is an independent candidate who has emphasised that at every... And I'm saying that because I know if Catherine was here, she'd say, I'm not the Sinn Féin candidate. She's not the Labour candidate either. Neither is she the Social Democrats candidate or the PPP candidate. She is an independent candidate who is being supported.
Is that not semantics? Is the candidate chosen by Sinn Féin behind...
No, I don't think it is.
Behind whom Sinn Féin is throwing their support?
She's an independent. She's an independent that is supported by... No, I'm just saying to you, if Catherine was here, she would emphasise herself that she stood as an independent. She was elected as an independent. She's running as an independent. And she has the backing of the Labour Party, Social Democrats, PPP, Socialist Party and Sinn Féin.
Well, with your backing, is there any concern in the fact that the woman in question, as a member of Éireachtaí stands very much against what for Sinn Féin is regarded as a crowning glory of the peace process, that being the Good Friday Agreement?
But I mean, that's the matter for the people who want to support Éireann. I'm in Sinn Féin. We are proud of our role in terms of the peace process, proud of the Good Friday Agreement, and proud of the fact that we have, 30 years of peace on this island, which I think is something worth remembering and celebrating.
Text saying, in fairness, the president is the president of all citizens, including reformed criminals. Another, the don't knows are split between Gavin and Humphrey. Not much by Jim Gavin's side of things, according to the poll, because most in the centre don't really like either of those centre candidates and will probably just pick one. What has happened to the Jim Gavin campaign, Pat? From your analysis, why is it that he is apparently, according to the Ireland Thinks poll, languishing behind the other two?
Well, it's a difficult election, you know, because you can't seriously talk about policy because of the limited scope that the Constitution confers on the ORUS. And therefore, you know, it's about political profile and character. And I think Jim Gavin passes the character test. But he certainly is inexperienced as a politician, has been exposed so far.
How?
Well, his robotic performances, for example, in public interviews where he seems to be regurgitating briefings that he's been given or whatever. There's no particular evidence that he's a man with a worldview who has thought about issues and who has a track record that he can point to his stance on various controversies of the past 30 years or legislation of the past 30 years. And, in that sense, the presidential election is a tough election because the scrutiny that one is subjected to, you know, if you got a parking ticket 25 years ago, it's likely to be dredged up.
Well, he's now in the current issue is whether or not he owes money back to a tenant that lived in one of his apartments, I think, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I read that. I don't know about it. I don't know what he would say if he were here in terms of defence of his position. Yes, I've read it. It's in the papers again today. And, obviously, it's not helpful. And again, some people will be influenced by that. But the way I think to deal with it is for him to set out what are the facts.
So is this another instance, do you think, Austin, of the Michael D. Higgins strategy of the person who wins is the one who says least and is noticed least?
Quite possibly. And I think it may be particularly weighing on Jim Gavin in that sense, because if you look at the trend around the world, it's for larger than life figures to emerge from beyond politics. And Jim isn't emerging in terms of his persona as a larger than life figure. So in that respect, there's the inexperience and there isn't a gospel, according to Jim, in that regard, which there was with his Dublin football teams and that, but it's not translated into this. And in that regard, I think that miss of sort of, oh, well, if you're going to be something different, be something exciting. And so far, we haven't seen that.
But I think it'll be interesting now to see, because there's no point in us denying it. The poll backs what you can see with your own eyes. His campaign is not going well. And I think, we need to reflect. Fianna Fáil are going to need to reflect on what this means for Micheál Martin. He was very much the choice of Micheál Martin. It is very much a campaign crafted, and some would say even overshadowed, by Micheál Martin. So the performance of Jim Gavin is really very, very closely linked, I think, to Micheál Martin.
Will it cost him that much in the way of political capital if he's unsuccessful?
Well, by all accounts, he expended a massive amount of political capital to get him onto the ballot. So I don't know how much political capital he has left, to be frank. But these things tend to just move on. You know, the election happens. They're not massive elections. They're not massive indicators of how a party is going to do at the next, at the next election. But it is, I think, something, Micheál very closely associated himself with this election. He was very heavily involved in it. Some would say, that he himself put himself in front of people and said, look, I want you to back this person for me, by all accounts. And again, I mean, it's I have no firsthand knowledge of this, but it is what you hear. And now I think there is quite an amount of anger simmering.
Interesting headline edited in the Indo saying Micheál Martin promised us Top Gun, but Jim Gavin gave us Thunderbirds instead on Fiona and GNSP. Sorry, Pat. Go on.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Heather Humphrey's handlers haven't allowed her to brandish her difference. You know, she is a member of a minority community. She's a Presbyterian. I think, notwithstanding the allegations of tenuous association with the Orange Order, I think most Irish people in 2025 would be proud of having a president with a Presbyterian background representing that point of view from a border constituency. And yet she hasn't presented that in that way, nor has the party. And I'm a bit surprised at that, because from that poll today, you know, she would need to pull her socks up.
It would seem she'd also need to pull her socks up in terms of debate performances, because the absolute consensus in the Ireland Thinks poll is that Catherine Connolly, I won't use the phrase, but handed a certain part of her anatomy to her during the first presidential debate.
You can't deny the fact that the person who was most comfortable in her skin during that debate, and who was comfortable on the issues, was Catherine.
Yeah, Heather Humphreys is seasoned enough that she should be good in that kind of set. Mm.
She is, and she's a very likable, amiable person. Perhaps debate has never been her forte, but I think she does strike a chord with a lot of people. And that's why I say that her personality, her difference, her background ought to be put out there if you were a Heather Humphreys supporter.
I'm just trying to find, I can't put my finger immediately on the numbers, but I think it was something like 47% of people viewed that Catherine Connolly was the overwhelming winner.
And oh yeah, no, I can't find the figures now, but yeah, it is. It was
Here it is, sorry. Who won the Virgin Media TV debate? Catherine Connolly, 44%. Well, yeah. Heather Humphreys, 6%. Jim Gavin, 5%, and Austin's favourite cohort, the Don't Knows, in at 45%. But by God, that's a fairly overwhelming.
But I mean, that's not going to surprise anyone that actually watched the debate, Anton, to be fair. Like, Catherine was head and shoulders above the other two. And it did surprise me, because, I mean, Heather has a lot more experience than Catherine. Obviously, Heather's been a cabinet minister, but has also served in the Oireachtas, I think, longer than Catherine. Heather was elected in 2011 and Catherine was elected in 2016. So, I mean, Heather would have a considerable amount of experience. I was quite surprised that she didn't have much to offer and not a lot to say. She sort of sat back. I have a feeling now, I mean, obviously there's going to be a debate happening shortly. I have a feeling we might see maybe a different side of the two who did not come out on top. But like, that poll wouldn't be news or wouldn't be shocking to anyone who had watched the debate.
I do think the sort of election management has been probably run too much on a, let's not give away anything too much in the early stages. Let's pack the midfield and defence and that. And that hasn't really worked. I think you will see a change, but there is that dominant sort of negativity and sort of avoid being cast as too negative. So be bland or whatever for the first while. It will heat up. You know, there is a decent chance.
Will it? Because a lot of texts like this one are coming in saying the bottom line is none of the three candidates are worth a vote. They're the bottom of the barrel.
Well, that will be an interesting element over the next couple of weeks. I think it will heat up a little bit. And I think, you know, if the Humphreys campaign or the Gavin campaign are to actually win this, they have to pull something significant out of the fire. The budget, as we'll talk about later, isn't going to help them. So there's nothing going to emerge there. And unless we see some extraordinary negative story about one of the candidates, it's about, will someone emerge as a likable, credible candidate? And Catherine Connolly is ahead in that now, you know, but we are still in the early stages of this race.
One final thing on the presidency, one of the questions being asked of people in that Ireland Thinks poll: do you believe Maria Steen should have got a nomination to run? She's getting far more publicity after her attempt at the presidency than I think she did during it. Pretty much 50-50 split, 44% saying she should have got a shot, 46% saying she shouldn't have. Is there any issue, do you think, Pat, as we look at the people who didn't make that hurdle, in how high the bar is set to get on the ballot, or is it a good system?
Well, I honestly don't think that Mr. De Valera had Maria Steen in mind when he constructed the Constitution in that fashion. It's the same for everybody. And, you know, a friend of mine was saying to me during the week he had thought that a Hermes Kelly was the name of the leader of the Irish National Party. Apparently, that's not the case. But I think...
This is, for those uninitiated, her 20 grand handbag that yes, was a test of us.
Which she waved at the poor to taunt them. So, you know, I think, yes, there is a cohort of the population out there who feel they are no longer represented by the centrist parties, and they were looking for a candidate. But if Ms. Steen wanted to become a candidate, she had 3 or 4 months earlier to prepare her case rather than whinging about the bar being too high.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a numbers game. So there's people who want us to believe that the person who could only get 18 people to support or couldn't get 20 is somehow going to get 700,000 people to support her. That stretches credibility.
Even in a whipped system?
And here's the other thing, right? It's a fella around in my constituency at the last election. He got 153 votes. Good luck to him. He's perfectly entitled to do it. Now, he wasn't blocked by anybody. There's nobody stood in his way. It wasn't anybody that got, he wasn't, you know, his campaign wasn't stymied. He just didn't get the numbers. That's exactly what happened to Mrs. Steen. That's exactly what happened to all of the people who tried.
But the man in your constituency had an open electorate. She had a very specific, somewhat controlled electorate.
Well,
they're different things.
He didn't. The electorate is the electorate. In that case, she needed to get 20. She got 18. There you go. There's the numbers. He needed to get, 6,500. He got 153. That's the gap. Yeah, if you don't get the numbers, you don't get elected. That's how these things work.
On the topic of numbers, one final thing on the Ireland Thinks poll. Good news for Sinn Féin. You are now neck and neck largest party by popularity with Fine Gael, both of you on 21%. Unfortunately, your timing always seems to happen when you are far from an election, Louise.
There's only one poll that actually matters, and that is the one upon election day, Anton, as you know. Yeah,
you must be heartened by it.
I think, well, it's nice to see if you go up in a poll. Of course it is. I'd be stupid to say that it wasn't. But I'm not sure that people are thinking about a general election. And my job at the moment is to get people thinking about the presidential election and about Catherine Connolly and coming out and voting for her. So, that, you know, and I'm not sure that people are focused necessarily on a general election. That said, of course, it is always better to see your party go up than down. I mean, I'd be foolish to say anything else.
The other thing that people, of course, are focused on is the budget. And there's an awful lot of coverage of that. I have to apologise to Austin Hughes because every time I move a newspaper, I blow his A4 sheets across the studio. But he has thoughts on those A4 sheets. We'll get to that after this break. With me is Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin, Fingal West, Pat Rabbitt, former leader of the Labour Party, and Austin Hughes, economist. And Austin, I lean on your expertise a bit. We're looking into looking ahead to what's reported to be one of the tightest budgets in recent memory. Some of the analysts saying that it's going to be the tightest in more than a decade. This despite us being high on the hog when it comes to corporation tax receipts.
Yeah. Now, of all the economists you could have chosen in Ireland, you probably got the wrong one, because I think there'd be a very significant number saying about time, this is the right move. We need to be tougher. It won't be tough enough. I think it's economically distorted. From what we're hearing, it's distorted economically. It's damaging socially. And it's probably dangerous politically as well. You know, there is no need to be super tight in terms of the budget on Tuesday. There is a need to be controlled around the public finances over the next couple of years. But it's not a problem for today.
But now, hang on, devil's advocate. Yeah. Spending has increased across almost every single government department hand over fist in the last decade. We have a situation where we are absolutely wedded to corporation tax receipts from a very limited number of US companies, and we have a potential tariff war and economic problems across the entire globe. In that context, surely now is when you tighten your belt like mad.
Okay, let's take them in turn, right? Spending out of control. Spending has risen rapidly enough, right? But if you look, there's a Department of Public Expenditure and Reform report from last year shows that the average public spending per capita in Ireland is about 22,000, which is about game ball with the top European countries. That compares to 14 other European countries. It's increased at roughly the same rate over the last 10 years as other countries. Look at the German draft budget end of September. Spending is increasing, when you look at the funnies, through the funnies, by 6.5%. In 2024, the German government borrowed 50 billion. This year, they're borrowing $145 billion. Next year, the draft budget just going through is saying $174 billion. If central banks saying, if we take out all the excess, you know, corporation tax receipts, we'd have a deficit of about 2% of our national income. The deficit in the States, 6.5, stuck there for the next 10 years. France, look at the political mess, 6%. Belgium, around the same. European average, around 3.25. If you take out the funnies, the various, because Germany's doing it through various funds, it's going to be close to 4%. UK, look at the mess in the UK trying to keep the deficit under 4%. So, you know, in our worst
case
scenario,
but we're flattered by all of those multinationals paying us.
If you take out half the corporation tax receipts, I'm saying to you now, you would have a deficit that is much, much lower than in these other countries. You know, if the only thing that matters in the economy is the public finances, yes, this is the right thing. But we have a surplus in the public finances. Are you going to tell me we don't have a deficit on infrastructure? Because look at central bank research, and they will point out that our investment spending over the last 10 years has been flattish, you know, in terms of public investment.
But what of the wind that is blowing? What about tariff wars? What about the global context?
Well, look at how resilient the economy has been. Look back, you know, if some of your listeners have problems sleeping, look back at every central bank budget recommendation, every IFAC budget recommendation since 2015, 2017. It's all the budget is irresponsible. There's a, you know, we are in a world where we are in a sort of perma uncertainty at the moment. So there will always be some reason not to spend. A year ago, it was that the economy is overheating. You know, now it's that the risks are to the downside for the economy. The central bank forecasts show a modest enough slowdown next year. So do ESRI. It's contained. There are real risks. Look, let's not be foolish about this. There are risks around the public finances, you know, but there is also a reality of real problems in infrastructure, real problems in housing, real problems in cost of living pressures across the economy. And a budget that ignores these aspects of it is disastrous economically, distorted economically. I think the thrust of it, the reality may not be quite as damaging as I'm setting out now, but we have a golden opportunity. We do have to manage public finances and be careful in our spending and get value for money. But it is ridiculous, you know, and you know, to put the top on it, we'll talk about VAT and restaurants maybe specifically in a minute or two. But, you know, that sort of preference element shows that it's a government that is out of touch with really what's
happening. Well, it's definitely a government that is out of touch with your view, because if you're any of the coverage, Pat, in the last week, 2 weeks and beyond, is very clear that the government is softening everybody up for, brace yourselves, lads, this is going to be tight.
I don't much disagree with the macro view set out by Austin there. And I think on the micro view, I think if the government is determined to sacrifice the PAYE workers of Ireland in return for a VAT reduction for restaurants, I think they're making one huge political miscalculation. Everybody understands that fiscal drag will eat into the wages of people at work because of inflation, because of not broadening the tax bands. And in those circumstances, to say we will have no money available to broaden the tax bands or to make any tax concessions, but we are going to spend 770 million. Okay, they may say it's for a half year this year, but it'll be for embedded in the system a full year thereafter, 770 million. That is a huge miscalculation. If I thought that the restaurants of Ireland at risk would be kept open as a result of this VAT measure, I would be minded to entertain that idea. But nobody seriously argues that restaurants at risk are going to be saved by this.
Well, is that not the argument, that you catalyse more business if you reduce the costs and that you keep people in jobs?
sorry, one might make the argument for that. I don't think it holds any water at all. The reality is businesses turn over. US research suggests the average restaurant lasts about 4 to 5 years. So that would mean, in terms of the Irish stock of restaurants, you should see about 1,300 closures every year. Now, there are two elements here. If you look at the detailed national accounts data, you'll see that over since 2019, consumer spending on restaurants and hotels has increased by about 67% against, now this is in money terms, overall spending is up 43%. So there's demand has been there. Over the last 3 years, employment in the sector has gone up. The last year has been really tough because of the surge in food costs on top of the earlier surge in energy costs. There's no way you can turn back the tide on that. If you're saying to me, food costs and energy costs are going to come down and everyone is going to feel lovely next year, then yes, it may make sense. IFAC, whom I would disagree with a lot of the time, had a lovely piece out saying that if you didn't do this, you would have nearly 12,000 more nurses, 8,000 teachers, right? If you look through the maths of it, you are, and say you saved 10,000 jobs in 180,000, and I don't think there's a possibility of that happening. You're talking about a 68,000 per job cost for saving that. It's ridiculous in that.
But that's the equivalent. So the VAT cut for restaurants will cost us the equivalent of hiring 8,000 teachers.
That's IFAC, or 11,500 nurses. That explains it to the average person on the street. I don't think they understand it. The government has been conned. And if they're going to go ahead with it, they will rue the day, because it is the biggest bloomer that I remember in recent times. You simply can't.
And what do you attribute to? Just the power of the lobby? Is that?
Yes. For example, the Labour Party, I was interested in the proposal about child poverty, that a second tier of child benefit would cost approximately 770 million, which is, ironically, the figure that the VAT in a full year reduction in restaurants will cost. Now, it seems to me that, again, if a government confronted with the choice of dealing with child poverty, which is endemic in the society out there today for a variety of reasons, and that this would take a significant proportion of children out of poverty, well, then it seems to me it's an easy decision.
Well, we're going to have Ross Lewis with us a little later on. He of Chapter One, because he has been one of the people who has been pushing for and hoping that the VAT reduction would come in. Would you be of the same view, Louise?
Well, I think I was very taken by what Austin said in relation to the infrastructure deficit, because I do think, you know, when you're talking about spending, and then, you know, the charge often is that would overheat the economy, or that would contribute to inflation. Actually, if you spend on those large scale infrastructure projects, and if you spend on housing, it won't have that impact. It will have the impact of, ensuring that people have somewhere that they can afford to live that is secure. So I think what the budget will mean in real terms for people, you know, for an awful lot of people, they will look at it in terms of either housing, or, you know, because that's on their agenda. And you see that in the poll, actually. I think housing is top, but the cost of living is next. So the government are going to, in the next while, try to spin it that the cost of living crisis is over. And maybe they can't see it from how high up in their ivory tower they are. I don't know. But on the ground where real people live, the cost of living crisis is not over. And people, there's 300,000 households heading into the winter already in arrears on their ESB bills. There's another 175,000 in arrears with their gas. So that's people who are already now.
Give me those numbers again.
330,000 people, households are in arrears on their electricity. There was figures obtained by my colleague Lynn Boylan and Pa Daly. So that's already, and those figures actually go back. They go back a couple of months. So that was when the sun was shining, you know, and now you have. So, you know, if you are talking about investing in really decent retrofitting that people can afford, if you're talking about investing in large scale social and affordable housing for working people to rent and buy, which is what Sinn Féin have been proposing, well, then that investment will actually have the opposite effect of overheating the economy. It will have the impact primarily, unless, you know, like you can talk about big numbers, but at the end of the day, people are interested in one number, and that's the, you know, that's the number on their own front door.
We can either go into the muddy stuff of statistics that says service inflation in Ireland below the European average for the last year. So there's not overheating in terms of, as Louise says, you add to supply as well. But it is really daft, you know, to think that you can keep the economy going and keep society sustainable in this regard. Economists in the US, after COVID, people talked about a K-shaped economy where those at the top were doing really well and those at the bottom, you know, who are more exposed to COVID were doing badly. They're talking about that again in the US. And you do have that situation in Ireland. The June numbers that you mentioned, you know, I think it was electricity, people were more than 3 months in arrears. There was about 176,000, right? If you think about that, that's roughly the same number who went to the Oasis concerts. So you have an economy where some are doing really well, some are doing really poorly. And, you know, we have, in a sense, you know, the prudence of the privileged almost being enunciated here, that people need to be aware that this will, you know, corrode society, corrode the basis of the economy, and look at what's happening.
And Austin, can I just
France.
Ask, where you talk about the K, the people who are on the lower end of that K and who are struggling most, is that because the increase in things like food costs and energy costs have a disproportionate impact on those who don't have disposable income? Is that it?
Yeah, there's an aggregation problem in economics. Household income across the economy as a whole has gone up very significantly because there are a lot more households. If you take the average household, it is probably a little down over the last 5 years. It may be marginally up in the last year, but it will probably be down from the next couple of quarters because of the temporary measures put in a year ago aren't being repeated. So there's a struggle there at the average. Now, in terms of food, you know, the lower income groups spend more on food. They may spend more on heating as well because they're living in poorer accommodation. So their kind of circumstances are worsening. I prepare the Credit Union Consumer Sentiment Index every month, and it's showing sentiment is really soft. And as Louise is mentioning, the things poll, the things that people wanted addressed in the budget were housing, healthcare, infrastructure, cost of living. The least popular of 13 options we gave in our September or August survey was a cut in VAT.
Well, by the way, on that, a text asking, did any of the opposition parties argue against the cut in VAT for restaurants? What was the Sinn Féin position? Did you argue against
it? No, so we had supported it, but we did it as part of, and it's in our alternative budget, but we did it as part of a suite of measures. So you've got to look at...
And what was your logic for it? Why did you want it?
Well, because what we wanted to see was, one, to ensure the viability for the those small restaurants, to exclude the large hotels to the greatest extent possible, and also to exclude the large employers. But we also included in that a €1 raise for the minimum wage, because that balance is needed, and a PRSI rebate as appropriate.
But what Pat's saying and what Austin's saying is there was no need to do the VAT cut at all.
Well, yeah, but budgets are all about choices and about balance. You know, what we wanted to see coming out of the budget, what we want to see on Tuesday, is a budget that will actually address the issues around child poverty, a budget that will actually address the issues around consistent poverty. What we are going to get, if the leaks are to be believed, will be incentives for developers, tax breaks for landlords. That is absolutely not what is needed.
It would appear that it's not possible to strip out the VAT issue from, say, McDonald's benefiting from the cut, or indeed hotels that never had it better. And in those circumstances, I mean, it's a fact, as Austin said, that for as long as we've been around, restaurants have been opening and restaurants have been closing. And this is one big gaffe.
Well, we'll be talking, as I said, to Ross Lewis a little bit later on about that text saying it should be remembered when the 9% was introduced, it was encouraged to be passed on to get the public to go dining again at the time of COVID. This time, there's no secret being made of the fact that it's going to go straight into the coffers of the restaurant owners. Big thank you to Austin Hughes, economist, Pat Rabbit, former leader of the Labour Party, and Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.